You are listening to inspiring stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary stuff. Welcome to the Doolanders.
Hit it!
That's what I'm talking about.
Wait!
Okay, now, from the beginning.
Hit it, boys.
Doolanders, this is a big event. This is episode 50. Raise your bat. If you're into cricket, you'll know exactly what that means. But our next guest would not have any clue as to what raising the bat when you reach 50 or a half ton is. Blake, if I said to you, run as far as you can and just do not stop until I tell you to stop, how far do you reckon you'd get?
I think I could probably get to, I don't know, like 35, 40 kilometres.
And then what would happen?
Oh, like I'd start to cry. my body would break down. That's what had happened to me.
Well, our guest today, the one and only Dean Karnazes, who listens to the podcast as he's running through the trails. He once ran nonstop for 3 days, Blake. He's run 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states in America.
Yeah, and was actually once named by Forbes one of the top 10 most influential people in America. Can you believe that?
That's amazing. Incredible. Well, let's get stuck into the interview, Blake. This is Dean Karnazes.
Come on, Dean.
Hey, it's Dean Karnazes, a Yank here from America. And whenever I'm cooking a shrimp on the Barbie, I listen to the Doolanders podcast.
Hey, Blake, before we get stuck into this episode, where should our listeners go if they want to hear more stories of people doing?
They should jump on to www.thedoolanders.com.au. And what will they find there, Nick?
No, not .com.au, Blake, just .com.
Oh.
Don't make that mistake. You can hit us up on Facebook. You can hit us up on Instagram and our website, and you can find a whole heap of pictures, articles, links.
Recipes?
Not a ton of recipes, okay. But you just never know what you'll find. TheDoolanders.com, no.au.
Do it.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
Dean Karnazes, welcome to the Doolanders. How are you, mate? All the way, where are you, by the way?
I'm across the Pacific in San Francisco.
Fantastic. And Nick, how you doing?
Pretty good. I'm very envious of the trophy cabinet I can see across the Pacific. It's impressive.
It is amazing.
Golden shoes.
It is unbelievable. Hey, Dean, we always like to ask our guests, tell us firstly, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, I'm Dean Karnazes and I run. I also write periodically, but I mostly run.
Great. And you do both of those exceptionally well, and we'll get under that in just in a moment. So let me just frame up some of the amazing things that you've done for our listeners. So your dad, much to your chagrin, loves to call you the ultra marathon man, and he does that at the top of his voice, and you know, you hide and go, oh god, don't call me the ultra marathon man. But he's right. So you've run 135 miles across Death Valley in 120 degree temperatures several times. You've run 350 continuous miles for foregoing sleep for 3 nights. That's crazy. Run a marathon to the South Pole in negative 40 degrees. Run a 200 mile relay race solo, racing alongside teams of 12 on 10 different occasions. And you've run 50 marathons in all 50 states in 50 consecutive days, finishing with the New York Marathon, which you ran in 3 hours flat. Unbelievable, Dane. Unbelievable. So Nick and I are runners, and, you know, we might get, how far do we go, Nick?
200-300 meters down the road.
No.
I think you max out at about 21.
That's about it. That's about our thing. So you've said, to me, running is a grand adventure, an intrepid outward exploration of the landscape and this inward journey of self. Is that why you do it, to explore both the external and internal experience of life?
I think that's why a lot of us run. I think that we learn a lot about ourselves through the movement of our body. And running holds a mirror up to you like few other sports. It forces you to confront yourself, confront your limitations, and it forces you to see what you're made of.
It does, doesn't it? And we'll get underneath that a bit. You've also got this crazy, amazing gift to paint pictures with words, which you know, not many people across the globe have got, but you have. I just want to read something that you've written about running. So you say that our daily outings become purging and resurrections. We move through this world as spirits, the air and the ground and the sky above absorbing us into something grander, and we disappear from the unbearable heaviness of being. These moments of transcendence cleanse our soul and liberate us from the manufactured and superficial. For a brief, beautiful instant, we are as human as is meant to be, free and unencumbered, and this restores us and makes us fresh once more. I love the way that you think about running. How much of your running is actually like that?
The good runs. Yeah. And I think every runner can relate to those words. I think I just kind of captured how we feel when we're having a good run, when we're in that quote unquote zone and have forgot about everything except for the present moment of time, the here and now.
Is it a form of meditation for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've tried to meditate and I'm no good at it. I mean, I think there's a saying, motion stirs emotion. I think only through movement can I actually get to that place of meditation.
Yeah. So reading your books and doing some research for today's podcast, you've inspired so many people along the way, whether that be intentional or not, right? And I think most of it not. But you have inspired many, many people. For those people that don't run or that are thinking about running, what is your advice?
You know, I say start from the ground up. So literally a practical bit of advice is get a good pair of shoes. You know, running footwear technology has advanced so much in the past, you know, decade. So invest in some good shoes.
Yep.
And then look internally. If you're like me and you're an introvert and prefer running by yourself, run by yourself. If you are an extrovert and prefer group runs and you like the accountability of knowing I've got to be, you know, on Wednesdays and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. to meet the group to run, then join a running group.
Yeah.
But I think running is a very personal thing. So look at who you are and make it something that is consistent with your being.
Yeah. Yeah. Super cool. Okay. So when you think about the external, like what are some of the greatest places across this very vast globe that you've actually explored whilst running?
How long is this interview?
Yeah, well, we've got days. We could go sleepless for three nights. No,
I've raced and competed on all seven continents twice now.
Wow.
So, you know, one of my favorites actually was in Australia. I ran to the top of Mount Kosciuszko. Wow. And then from there to Sydney. So it was called Summit to Sydney. It was a 600-kilometer run in 6 days through the bush and the outback, and it was fantastic.
Start of the run is running up Kosciuszko.
Kosciuszko is not a huge mountain, as you guys know, and the run to the top is, what, maybe 3 or 4 kilometers at the most? So it wasn't a big run to get to the top of Kosciuszko because we started at the parking lot. But there, I turned around and ran 600 kilometers to Sydney.
Yeah. Do you remember what month you did that in?
It was in the spring in Australia.
Okay.
So it was coming out of winter. So it was cool. It wasn't real hot because I used to live in Australia and I know what it's like when you get inland. It's unbearable.
Yeah. Hey, when did you live in Australia?
I was an exchange student in high school. So when I was 15 years old, I moved to the northern beaches of Sydney, a place called Mona Vale.
Yeah.
And I spent a year in Australia.
What did you think of living in Australia?
Well, I'm from California. I'm a surfer.
Yeah.
And first of all, I mean, the surf in Australia is legendary. So school was optional. If the surf was good, school was optional. So I had the best time of my life. I traveled all around Australia by myself.
Yeah.
I went to Adelaide. I never made it to Western Australia, but I went to the Northern Territory, all through Queensland, Victoria, New South Wales, South Australia. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, you've just released another book. It's called A Runner's High, and it's a great read. It's an easy read and a must for all those interested in running, but I also think a must for people that keen on reading about people that are pursuing what they're passionate about. When did you discover that you could actually paint pictures with words and write?
You know, I've never considered, I mean, people call me a writer, but I've never considered myself a writer, quote unquote. I write, but I've never thought of myself as a writer. But I, you know, this is my fifth book, and now like the literary critics are giving me high marks as a writer. So maybe I am a writer. I just thought, you know, I just tell an honest story. I just describe how every runner feels and I put it in words and people can relate to that.
So when you think about the parallels between writing and running, like we've interviewed a bunch of writers, authors on this podcast, and it's bloody hard work. You got to sit down and do the work to get the job done. Do you find it hard work, or does this stuff just spill out of you? And do you have to be disciplined in your approach, or are you you just do it when it comes to you?
Well, I think both running and writing are 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. So to your point, it's a lot of, you know, heavy lifting. It's a lot of, you know, staring at a page, staring at a sentence. To me, I write a lot when I'm running. So I dictate into my phone.
Yeah.
When I'm running, because I think you'd agree, we have some of our clearest thoughts when we're running. So the passage you just read from my book was actually while I was out running. Right. And I think that's why I'm able to capture the runner's voice, because I'm in the midst of a run when I write it.
That is amazing. I would just, if I was writing a book whilst I was running, it would be just make it to the end of the street, shit my thighs hurt, oh my God, there's another hill. Okay.
Don't shit my pants. Right?
Exactly right. So let's go back to when the starting gun went off on your life, right back to the beginning. Where did you grow up?
Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and
my earliest childhood recollections are from running home from kindergarten when I was 5 years old. I remember very clearly waiting for the gun, the bell to go off, yeah, and treating it like a starting gun going off. I just bolted out of the class and I would run home.
Yeah, and you said that you didn't have much when you were a boy, but you had everything. What does that mean?
You know, my parents were very adventurous, so we didn't have things, and the best things in life are not things. You know, we had adventure and exploration. So, you know, every weekend, every moment we could escape, we would go to the mountains or to the desert and explore and roam. And to me, that sort of wandering and that wanderlust comes from my parents.
Right. So, and that experience of jumping into that green Ford Country Squire station wagon and heading for the trails every, you know, weekend, school holiday, spring break. Did that experience, do you think, reflecting back now, shape what you do today?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, I felt my best when I was in nature, yeah, and exploring. I think to a point every kid does. It's just we rob kids of the opportunity. You know, we've kind of manufactured, as I speak about in another passage, we kind of manufactured this world for us, and maybe it's just not the best way for a human to grow up.
Yeah. Is it true, and you know, it must be because I'd read it in one of your books, that early on you thought you could be a minister or a bishop? Why?
My mother told me that. Well, because, you know, I was a very disciplined kid. Yeah. And I think running is a very disciplined, and writing is a very disciplined activity. And I remember being in church when I was 6 years old and forcing myself to pay attention. And this is a Greek Orthodox church. And the sermon is like an ultra marathon. I mean, it goes on for 3 or 4 hours and it's all in Greek.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember just sitting there saying, pay attention, pay attention. I remember looking like left and right in the pews and people are just crumbling. You know, people are just exhausted and falling down and just, you know, buckling and passing out as this guy was just going on and on. But I forced myself to pay attention. And I think that's why my mom thought maybe I'd be a minister.
When you think back to your, so you were disciplined as a kid. And when you think back to your you know, let's say your early teenage years, was it clear to you what you wanted to do with your life?
You know, I loved to run until I was 15, until basically the year before I moved to Australia. Mm. And then I thought, you know, running's boring. It's a waste of time. So I stopped running.
Right.
And, you know, I got very into surfing, pursued surfing. And then it was always outdoor activities. So I loved to rock climb. I loved the mountain bike. I started windsurfing. I learned to windsurf actually in Australia. And it was always these outdoor pursuits, kind of singles, you know, one man sports. They weren't team sports. So I always loved those sort of things. But running exited my life when I was 15.
Right. And you know, you went and pursued a number of different jobs. And I think, you know, you talked about windsurfing there. You thought about becoming a professional windsurfer. You had jobs in healthcare and consumer products and other things like that. When did you actually realize that the normal operating rhythm of life wasn't for you and that you just wanted to spend all day running?
You know, it was the night of my 30th birthday. And so after I graduated from high school, I somehow graduated from high school. I went to university. And are you losing me?
No. Sorry. What did you study at university?
Oh, I studied biochemistry.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I went to what they call graduate school. So I got an advanced degree. And then I went to business school. I got what's called an MBA. So I got a business degree. And on my 30th birthday, I was in a night, you know, in a pub with my mates. And I was getting pissed as a lizard, as you guys say.
Jeez, he's good at this accent. Yeah.
And at midnight, I told them I was leaving. And they said, you know, where are you going? Let's have another round of tequila to celebrate. And I said, no, I'm going to run 30 miles right now to celebrate instead. And they looked at me and they said, but you're not a runner. You're drunk. And I said, I am drunk, but I'm still going to do it. And I walked out of this pub and I didn't even own running gear, but I had on these comfortable silk underwear, these silk boxer shorts. I'll never forget, I peeled off my pants and just started stumbling south. There was a town called Half Moon Bay that was 30 miles away, and I just said, run to Half Moon Bay. And, you know, that night forever changed the course of my life.
How much of that do you actually remember? Like, how drunk were you?
I sobered up about halfway through it,
yeah.
And I thought, you know, what am I doing? This is horrible. This is absurd.
Yeah.
It hurts so bad, but something just felt right. And the other thing is that I was out in the middle of nowhere by this time, so there's no turning back.
Yeah.
So I thought, you're either going to die out here or you're going to keep going, and I kept going.
So what did the residents of Half Moon Bay think when you stumbled in your boxer shorts?
You know, this is before cell phones, so I'll never forget. I came to a convenience store, like a convenience market, and there was a payphone out in front, and I called Julie, my wife, to come pick me up. And I just remember that, like, people coming in to get their morning coffee, like on their commute, and here I am, you know, covered in road grime in my underwear, you know, calling on a payphone. So I don't think, you know, they probably thought they should call the cops.
Well, you're built like a Greek god. And you're a very, very handsome man. They would have gone, hey, who's this good-looking rooster?
And it is San Francisco, too. So we got that. And he is Greek. I mean, geez.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, before we get into how you made a career out of lifelong running, you know, tragedy struck your family when you lost your sister. And I'm really interested in how you coped with that loss. And was it before you found running, or did you anaesthetize yourself in other ways?
Yeah, well, I didn't cope very well initially, and I was very angry, and angry at the world. And, you know, how did I take out my anger? I started drinking, which is a very unhealthy outlet.
Yeah.
And then I was in denial. I wouldn't accept that she was gone, because we were very close. I mean, she was like my best friend, and I was 21 and she was 18 when she died. And then there was kind of numbness. And eventually, you know, I came to realize that, you know, the best way I can honor her is to be the very best I can every day of my life, to enjoy and live fully every single day in her memory, in her honor. And that's how she would want me to live my life, not, you know, an alcoholic and not bitter and angry at the world. So that's, it took 10 years to go through that kind of cycle of bereavement. Mm. But eventually I settled on, you know, do what you love, Dean, to the best of your ability. And that's the best way to honor her memory.
Okay. So you talk about that, and then you talk about 10 years later, and it's that running in your underwear and your gardening shoes to Half Moon Bay. And it's like there's no blueprint to making a living out of lifelong running, right? There's no roadmap. I don't know whether anybody else has, you know, done it before, and there's no real set career path. How did you magic this thing up? Like, what was your thought process? You've run the 30 miles after you're not on the tequila. What happened from there?
Well, you know, there's a saying that the lessons from athletics translate to business. But I also think the lessons from business translate to athletics. So I kind of analyzed, you know, this world of ultramarathoning that I was throwing myself into. And I said, okay, if you win every single race, you know, how much money do you make?
Yep.
And the answer was a donut. Yeah. I mean, you get a bunch of really nice belt buckles for finishing, but you don't make any money. So I thought, well, that's not very practical. You know, you've got a wife, you've got a daughter on the way. You know, how you going to feed the family? How are you going to keep the lights on? So I thought, there's got to be other ways to do this. And I thought about sponsorship. I did a lot of corporate keynote talks to, you know, big corporations, and that was helping. And then I thought, you know, write a book. And that was less of a way to monetize what I was doing, but more just a life goal, like, you know, kind of on my bucket list. I wanted to swim with sharks, you know, jump out of an airplane and write a book. So I wrote this book, and it just became an instant New York Times bestseller. And I thought, why are people interested in some guy running, you know, thousands of kilometers? Where's the appeal to that? And a lot of the people that were writing to me weren't even runners. They just said, your story is so powerful, it's so energizing. And I thought, you know, you could take this further. There's something in the messaging there that really resonates with people, and it helps people. It's getting people to be more engaged in their life. It's getting them off the couch. It's getting them to be more passionate about their desires. So I kind of just built a career around that.
It's phenomenal. I'm interested, how much of it then became, okay, this is one way to make some money. I reckon I can write a book if I run 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. Like, how much of it became, I'll do these extraordinary runs in order to write that story? Or was it never like that? Was it more organic? Yeah. Was it planned? How did you think through that?
Yeah. It's so funny you said that, because it was all organic. Like, right. I didn't think I'm going to go do this because I can write a great book about it. I kind of just did this thing. And then my agent said, wow, that was amazing. You should write a book about it.
Right.
So I just thought, seek out the most outrageous, you know, most adventurous thing you can.
Yep.
And try to pull it off. And it was just a lust for life and for trying to do these crazy things that drove me, not trying to sell a book or trying to, you know, make money out of it.
Yeah.
So you're this type of person who, during the middle of, you know, in your 25th marathon, in your 25th day, are you enjoying every step? Are you enjoying the process? Or is it only once you've finished, you can look back and reflect and go, that was actually really enjoyable?
No, I mean, it's so ironic you say that, because I could tell you every single marathon I ran. I remember conversations I had with people. I remember what happened along the way. It's like all of it is imprinted on my mind. I must have been like in this hyper aware state, because it was glorious. And the memories are glorious, but living through it as well was really a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah. I think about what you've achieved. The selling of the books is one thing, but, having just read your book, you list 40 odd sponsors that you've been able to acquire and align with over the journey. Clearly that MBA sunk in. And did you find that part of your gig, a part of your life, hard, or was that something that just came naturally?
I had a lot of people have the desire, but they don't have the hustle.
Yeah.
And thankfully I've got both. I mean, you're right. It's just a lot of hustle. It's constantly hustling. I don't know how else to put it. And thankfully I love what I do. So I have kind of infinite energy for doing it and I don't get exhausted by it, but you're right. It's the churn and burn is endless in doing what I do. It's, you know, if you just like having a set job where you get a paycheck and just show up at the office and do your job, this is not the career path you want to follow.
No, it's not.
And just on that, because there's a huge amount of risk with your career as you put it together. And, you know, all you have to do is stand on a nail and you can't, or potentially can't go and do the next event. And I've been intrigued hearing that you've never really had a serious injury. And I'd like to know what your scale of serious injuries are, because surely there's niggles and those sorts of things. For our listeners, there's a lot of health, people who like their health and well-being. People like running. I'm someone who has old man calves and I got them really early. You know, you start running too much, you overload and then you get an injury. How have you managed it? Like, how do you manage, you know, multiple marathons, you know, backing it all up? What are you doing? Are you doing anything? Are you just running? Are you doing cross training or something like that? Can you give us some insight into how you approach running and how other people could as well?
Yeah. You know, I approach running to, like through the lens of trying to be the best animal that I can be. So everything I do revolves around performing at my best. And that includes not doing something you guys are both doing right now. You can tell I'm standing up.
Yeah.
I never sit down. I do all my writing, you know, dictating, because I put in an earbud when I come home from my runs and dictate while I'm standing up. I also do a lot of cross training. So I'm very diligent about cross training. It's called HIIT training, so high intensity interval training.
We love it.
And it's yeah, you guys know it. So it's body weight and it's push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, chair dips, and burpees. And it's a pretty intense routine. It's about 12 to 13 minutes. And I do about 5 or 6 of those throughout the course of the day. Like just before we came on this interview, I just did a quick round. So I'm constantly exercising, as well as, you know, running sometimes twice a day, sometimes 3 times a day.
Right. So that's interesting. So is that the same? Is that a routine that you've just come up with and it's always the same and you do it 5 times a day?
I change up the order, but it's pretty much the same moves. Yeah.
So give us some insight.
It maxes me out where I can't even, like I get to the point of failure with each move.
Can you give us a rundown of what that 12 minutes entails? What are the exercises? How do you do them?
So
how do you get yourself in the mindset actually first? Cause I could go and do some push-ups now and give up after 3 because no one's watching. How do you actually get yourself into that zone? 5 times a day.
Yeah, I use a technique called forward projection. So I just try to project how much better I'm going to feel after I'm done and use that as a motivator to start. And for me, once I start, it's autopilot. And I think that's the same with running. I think a lot of people, if you can just get out the door, like the hardest part is getting out the door. Once you get out the door and you start down the road, you're good. So to me, I try to project how much better I'm going to feel. And also, I'm a harsh critic of myself. You know, you can't fool yourself. If I say I'm going to do, 50 push-ups, 50 honest push-ups, and I don't do it, I know I've fallen short. I mean, we can't lie to ourselves. And so I hold myself very accountable.
Right. So you're cross training. You're doing that 5 times a day. Are you stretching? Are you foam rolling? Do you have a Theragun? What are the other things you've got going for you?
No, I don't do anything. Yep. No, I have a really clean diet now and I try to optimize my sleep quality, but I don't do any stretching. I don't do any foam rolling and no massage. And, you know, 3 decades of running these, you know, pretty huge distances, I've never, the worst injury I've suffered is a lost toenail.
Wow. Your dad, your father, is he built like you? Are you built like him genetically? Are you made up from him or your mom?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% Greek, so they both have their different gifts. I mean, my dad he's very fit.
Yep.
And my mom has the gift of endurance. I mean, she's 80 and she walks a 10K every day on the beach,
right,
with her friends.
Yeah, okay.
That's like 7 days a week, she walks a 10K.
Cool.
So maybe some of it's from them.
Yeah. Yeah. You've said, hey, I'm nothing special, nothing commendable. In fact, I think of myself as a bit below average. I'm not sure that where that leaves us, Nick. The only talent I may possess is groveling. So if that's your default, and you just said you're super hard on yourself, how do you overcome the feeling of being, just average or below average to create what you've created?
I think I go into it with the mindset knowing that it's going to be a lot of work and it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
And that for me to succeed, I'm going to have to, put forth the effort twofold from anyone else. That I'm just going to have to try that much harder, and that's my recipe for success.
Yeah.
So I don't try to sugarcoat it. Like I don't say to myself, this is going to come easy, or this will be the day when things go smoothly. Yeah. I just tell myself, this is going to suck.
Yep.
It's going to hurt. It's going to test you. What are you made of? Can you do it?
Yeah. You're a pragmatist, aren't you?
I'm a romanticist too.
Are you? Well, we asked another one of our guests this recently. So if we said to your wife, Julie, on a scale of 1 to 20, how romantic is Dean? What would she rate you?
25.
He's great.
It's just who I am. Like I like gifting people. Like I really like giving to people, and she's a sucker. Like I can get her some chocolates and and life is just perfect for her. So
yeah,
I really like making people happy, and I know how to make her happy.
Reading your book, I fell in love with you, and I don't take this the wrong way, but I fell in love with your wife. Like, she absolutely seems like a phenomenal human. You give this example of, you said to her, hey, I really want to go and run across the country, and I'm going to be gone for months. And she turned around to you and she said, how exciting is that? Not, hey, what about me? Who's going to look after the kids? Who's going to walk the dog? Who's going to do the laundry? When you think about you reaching your potential, how much has she had to do with that?
I think she's just the bedrock of my life. I'll never forget when I told her I was going to quit my corporate job. I mean, mind you, I'm a business degree graduate. I've got a corporate job with, stock options, company car, a fat paycheck. Free healthcare, everything. And I told her I'm going to resign. And she looked at me, she said, I wonder what took you so long.
Yeah, wow.
So just incredibly supportive. Yeah.
Yeah, that is super cool. Hey, we are not, we don't have a lot of time left. So I've got a couple more questions left. So the tagline of your book, older, wiser, slower and stronger. And you speak about being passed by a younger athlete in the Sierra Nevada mountain range and having this fear of not being passed, but being irrelevant. How has what's important to you shifted with age or shifted along this journey?
What I've now learned is that the important thing is that I'm showing up.
Yeah.
It's not about winning. It's about showing up and continuing. So it's all about staying the course, being true to the man I am. It's now about longevity. Versus, winning races. And that's what shifted.
Yeah, cool. Clearly you've got the physical side of things in terms of looking after yourself well under control. Talk to us about how you master your mind and your spirit.
I run a lot.
I think it's all intertwined. Running is therapy.
Especially with COVID, this pandemic, I've used running as therapy more than I have my entire life. With travel gone and, me not being able to do book signings or corporate keynotes or, go to marathon expos and do poster signings for my sponsors, my life just ended.
Yeah.
And I really, running has saved me.
Beautiful.
Can you talk to us a little about the growth of ultra marathons? Because you talked a little earlier about, we possibly haven't built the right life for our kids, with devices and so many distractions, yet ultramarathoning is just growing, exponentially. So who are these people who are now ultramarathoning? I remember, 30 years ago, if someone said they were going to run a marathon, it would have been like, that's the peak in terms of endurance sort of efforts. But now clearly there's more and more you can do. Do you know what's behind the growth of ultras?
I think it's kind of people rebelling against modernity. I think that, you know, everything in our life is easy. Why do something hard? Because everything in our life is easy. So I think we thought in Western culture, if we had every convenience available to us, every comfort, we'd be happy. And I think we're so happy, we're so comfortable, we're miserable. And I think an ultra marathoner knows that there's magic in misery, that when you're suffering and, you know, when you're doubting yourself and, you know, you're doing everything you can to persist, you're really alive, more so than you ever are just in the normal course of a day. And I think that's the kind of the conflicted appeal of ultra marathoning.
Yeah. Hey, Dean, you've inspired so many people over the journey. Who inspires you?
Oh, I would say my dad. Yeah. That might sound funny to you after, you know, writing about him, but he's always there for me. He's always been there for me. And I didn't always want him there. I mean, I remember when I was a young boy, I thought, you know, why is my dad coming to every sporting event I'm at? Like, my dad is everywhere. And I didn't want him there. But in hindsight, a lot of other of my friends, their dads were never there.
Yeah.
And now I realize what a gift he bestowed upon me.
Yeah. And both your mum and dad are still there, you know, on your runs and joined by your son, Nicholas. And I love that part of your book. I love the coming together of you and Nicholas at Western State. It was so well told, but it was such a poignant moment. Has that moment continued to change your relationship?
Yeah, I mean, with kids, you know, they grow up slowly, then all at once. I mean, I just, you know, Nicholas went away to university and I forgot who he was. And, you know, he came back and I remembered him as the young kid that he no longer was. And ever since he crewed for me at Western States, which, you know, I tell the story in the book, I was very concerned that he was going to be, you know, flaky and not do a very good job. And it was just the opposite happened. He was so responsible and so on it that, yeah, I actually respect my son a whole lot. And I never thought I would say that because, you know, he's the kid who says, you know, oh, my college roommates are slobs. And I look in his room and it looks like a Tasmanian devil just went through there. Like, come on, Nick, be serious.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's really a responsible guy, yeah.
Yeah, love it. All right, I said two more. I've got two more. So if you could head out on a leisurely run with any two people, past or present, who would it be and why?
You two blokes.
Yes, yeah, the Doolanders.
Because I miss the Aussie spirit. I'm really enjoying our conversation. It'd be fun for us to share some footsteps together.
That would be super cool. And
we're going to hold you to that when you come back down.
When you are back in Australia, we're absolutely going to do some sort of run somewhere. Hey, when you're out running, you love to listen to an audio book. We love to listen to podcasts. Rich Roll, we're a massive fan of Rich Roll. I think you've been on Rich Roll 3 times. We'd love an intro, by the way. Who do you listen to when you're running?
You know, I obviously I'm a fan of Rich as well, but I more delve into you know, audiobooks.
Yeah.
So long format books. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Last one. What is on your to-do list, Dean?
Funny you should ask. Do you guys have a couch?
We do.
I'm coming to Australia in August to run across New South Wales. So Pat Farmer, who's an ultra marathoner in Australia, contacted me. And he said, you know, we need to do something. He said, you know, teenage suicide is at epidemic levels in Australia right now. And we need to inspire people by doing something inspirational. And he said, let's run from Broken Hill to Byron Bay. And I'm like, Pat, how far is that? He's like, it's 1,000 miles. We'll run to the light, to the lighthouse. So we're going to run from Broken Hill to to Byron Bay and touch the lighthouse. That'll be the finish. And the name of the run is just 1,000 miles to light.
Hey, Dean, mate, thank you so much for your time. You've been super generous with your time. It's been inspirational to talk to. It's been inspirational to actually delve into your life and understand what makes you up. It's a little wonder why you've inspired so many people across the globe. Thanks, mate. Appreciate your time.
No, it's been lovely, and thank you guys. Thank you both.
Thanks, Dean.
So that was Dean. What an amazing man that Dean is. What did you take away from Dean, Nick?
Oh, well, you know what? When we were sitting in that interview, I was just going, man, I've got to run more. Yeah. I have no excuses for stopping at 8 or 10Ks in the morning. Boy, he just goes for it. I also now stopped warming up before I run because I figure, well, I've got this big run ahead of me to warm up, just like Dean.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, listeners, if you are keen to see what Dean has just accomplished, he spoke about being over here in Australia, and yes, he's just finished that amazing run. I think it was 1,000 kilometres, wasn't it?
Mm, that's right. So if you're interested in Dean's run, check him out at Ultra Marathon on Instagram. And if you want to hear more stories of our elite athletes that we've had on the Doolanders podcast, check out Jenny Pettenon, episode number one, Matthew Keenan, and Bridie O'Donnell, who are both the sound of the Tour de France, Jeremy Bettel, who's an elite sports performance coach, and then the one and only multiple world champion triathlete, Emma Carney. Bye for now, Doolanders.
See you guys.